you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle. We are just hours away from the 22nd Annual Film Week Academy Awards preview at the Orpheum Theater in downtown Los Angeles. Be there Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. We'll have all 11 of our critics on stage at the beautiful historic venue. We'll see clips from all the Oscar-nominated films. It'll be a great chance to hear the critics go at it because they're prepping, already hearing what they're saying about the nominees, not just for Best Picture, but the acting categories, the screenwriting categories. You're going to hear them go at it. That's Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock at the Orpheum Theater downtown. Tickets are available. They're going fast, but you can get them even in these final hours by going to laist.com/events. That's laist.com/events. We sure hope to see you there. This week, I'm joined by critics Leo Lowenstein and Tim Cogshell to talk about Dune Part 2, which is in wide release starting on Friday. Tim, what did you think of Dune Part 2?
Well, this is very, very, very good. This is an excellent film. Picks up right where the first film leaves off, right? The House of Atreides. So our Apollo Atreides. He has to avenge his house, his family slaughtered in that first movie. While at the same time, he's dealing with these premonitions that he has about what will happen if he assumes the mantle, the messianic mantle that these people, the Freemen, would like him to assume. Billions and billions will die. He has these visions about this. Zendaya, one of these Freemen, who will become his significant other, doesn't believe in any of this stuff and doesn't really believe in him in that context, but wants to support him. All of this stuff is the stuff of Frank Herbert's Dune. Fantastic, wonderful. This film is as different from that first film as Alien was from Aliens. All the same stuff. Totally different genre. This film is an action war film, just like Aliens was not a mystery thriller. Yeah. Aliens was an action army war. That's what this movie is. Oh, the narrative, we're going to deal with all of that, but this is a big spectacle film, twice as fast as the other film, even though it's a little bit longer than the other film. The special effects, just huge. What Denny has done is he's built this on an arc that makes total and complete sense. It draws you into all of this. So all of that is fantastic. You know what else you have in this film? And again, this has to do with Denis Villeneuve's adaptation of this script, right? That David Lynch film, 1984. David famously said that he never read those books, which was obvious. He had not read those books. Then he read the books. You can tell that he read the books. He knows what these movies, what the book was actually about. Anyway, the first one, anyhow. He's restored all of that.
And a book that he wrote later sort of further explaining
the character of
Paul Atreides represents.
Oh, that
and
messianic.
And Denis said that he brought that into this.
It is absolutely in this book. It's interesting because, for one thing, that David Lynch film, but for that matter, all those films that were made by those other books by his son, by Brian Herbert, I think is his name. All those films were full of, frankly, a whole lot of British people. This film has a lot of brown people in it, saying those Arabic words correctly. And all of that information is now, Frank Herbert, who had been a journalist before he started writing these books in the 60s, when he's writing these books in the 60s, sure, he was writing about all of that historic messianic stuff, all of that stuff, but he was also writing about the real world of the 60s, the 50s for that matter, the Algerians pushing the French out of Algeria, the things that were going on. All of that is in that 1965 book. That's what he's writing about in real time. Now, much of that was misinterpreted at the time. People really thought that Paul Atreides represented Jesus, the message. He doesn't. Paul Atreides is not Jesus. He's not Muhammad. He's not any of those things. Which is why he wrote that second book, by the way, to sort of dissuade people from a lot of these notions. What is in that book, and because of the way Denny has constructed the script, are the present sort of issues of the day. That day, Algeria, Mali, and all those places, and today. That's in this movie. When you watch these movies today, you can think about things happening in the world today. And that's really big, exciting, excellently made action. Yes, they are. Watch these movies with an eye toward history, not just ancient history from 2,000 years ago, but contemporary history of the day and contemporary history of today.
The thought-provoking Dune Part 2, written by Denis Villeneuve and John Spates. Denis Villeneuve, the director of the film, starring Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya, along with Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, and more. It's rated PG-13 in wide release. Problemista is a comedic drama starring Julio Torres, Tilda Swinton, and RZA. It's written and directed by Julio Torres. Lael.
I loved Problemista. I think it is one of the best films of this year. And it is the directorial debut of Julio Torres. And it poises him as someone to watch for. He is absolutely incredibly talented. So in this film, Torres plays an El Salvadorian immigrant who comes to the U.S. Hoping to make it as a toy designer. He's got all these crazy ideas about toy design, and his goal is to work for Hasbro. Well, once he gets here, he finds that if he doesn't have a sponsor, he's not going to be able to stay, and so on and so forth. He gets his first job is in a cryogenic factory. He pretty soon after that gets fired, but he lands a job with Tilda Swinton, who is the widow of the dead artist that he was assigned to monitor, but managed to mess up that job by unplugging the freezer. Tilda Swinton comes into this frame like a train on fire. She is Miranda Priestley hyped up to the nth degree. She is full of fury and humor and dark venom. And somehow this very mild-mannered Alejandro, played by Torres, he sees her. He's like, you know what? I can work with that. He can sort of humanize her maybe a little bit, and she can sort of make him a little tougher. So it's a coming of age story. It's visually and narratively inventive with touches of Wes Anderson, almost a little bit of Terry Gilliam. There's visual commentary, beautiful, stunning, kind of clever production design commentary on the complicated labyrinth of the immigrants process, you know, which is shown through an hourglass with the sands of time dripping out and a complicated maze that he has to navigate. It's a coming of age story. It's how hard it is to exist in New York, how hard it is to find yourself, how hard it is to find your way. He also comes out as he comes of age. So it's really so funny, so well done. It's a black comedy. It's absolutely delightful and a very promising talent in Julio Torres, who was, by the way, a writer on Saturday Night Live, known for, among other things,
Lots of Spookies and all.
Yeah, Lael? Lots of Spookies. Go ahead. Take it, Tim.
Yeah. let me just say, Problemista is the film we're talking about.
Problemista.
And Torres will be with us next week on Film Week talking about the movie.
Yeah, call me when he's on the show. I want to talk to this kid.
Me
Look,
too.
this very good actor, he is. Excellent writer. The jokes and these little circular jokes that he writes. Tilda Swinton, of course, is in wacky mode doing all this. Going on. This kid directs like he's a Saturday Night Live. And this feels like a bunch of... Directorially, I want him to get better.
Okay.
We need to hone our chops.
Dude, it's his first film.
I know, and I love you, kid. I love you. I'm telling you, call me. I'm going to talk to him. We need to sharpen this all up. But he's a wonderful actor and a really smart, smart writer.
There's so much vulnerability in
it's just so beautiful. Better directing skills are what we need here. That's all.
But Tim, he directed that great performance out of Tilda Swinton. That wasn't just all Tilda Swinton doing it on her own. I mean, come on.
Wouldn't it, though?
Give him some credit.
He's lovely. He wrote great stuff for, and they play off each other. It really is cute. RZA is in this thing. He plays this artist who only paints eggs, which is so funny. Like that.
That's so absurd.
And the eggs all have a mood. And when he explains the mood of the eggs as you're looking at them, you're like, oh yes, of course, that's a relaxing egg. Oh, that's an angry egg.
You really have to see it to appreciate it. But it is so funny. It is so funny. It's endearing. It's a great.
Yeah,
great film.
Yeah,
Problemista is rated R, written and directed by Julio Torres, who stars, and he'll be with us actually 2 weeks for our feature on Film Week. We continue with Lael and Tim on Spaceman, which is an action drama sci-fi starring Adam Sandler, Carey Mulligan, Paul Dano, and Isabella Rossellini. Johan Rank is the director. Lael, what'd you think of Spaceman?
Well, didn't love it like I did Problemista. Interestingly, by the way, Isabella Rossellini was the narrator of Problemista, and so there's some continuity here. She plays the director of a space agency in the Czech Republic that is sending, that has sent Adam Sandler on a mission to explore a strange purple cloud in somewhere in the universe.
Out around Jupiter.
Somewhere around Jupiter, yeah. And he has, when we first meet him, he has been on this mission for 189 days, 6 months, half a year, and he's lonely. He is the some of the equipment, like the toilet, is malfunctioning a little bit on his spaceship, and it's got this sort of old feel, like, you know, it feels a little bit, you know, old school. And meanwhile, his wife, played by Carey Mulligan, is on Earth, and she is very pregnant, and she is having some second thoughts about their marriage, and she sort of decides, well, she decides this is the time when she's going to tell him that she's going to leave him. So the premise is very, the setup is really kind of interesting, very intriguing. It got me hooked with that. He's also someone who's been sort of disengaged from his life, from his wife, from, you know, his marriage a little bit. He loves her, and he wants her to be there to support him, but he's just very much in his own head, his own job, his own business. And, you know, this distance between them, this emotional distance, is now manifested in the physical distance, and she's like, she says, I'm going to go. Meanwhile, the people who run the equivalent of NASA say, you know, we're not going to give you that message. We're not going to send him that message because we need him to be really focused. So there's some confusion, some drama around that. It gets really weird when a giant tarantula shows up that's sort of an alien in the spaceship. I can't say too much. I'll let Tim take it. It goes downhill.
Voiced by Paul Dano, this giant spider voiced by Paul Dano, and, you know, questions as to whether or not this is all in his head because he's out there. Like, look, you decide to dump me when I'm three quarters of the way to Jupiter? Now you're going to dump me? Are you kidding? Look, this is adapted from this checkbook, and what they do is a couple of interesting things sort of scientifically. They solved the problem, for instance, of delayed time breaks in messaging by coming up with something called faster than light communication.
Check connect.
And she has now. Paul Adam is in introspective mode here. He's very quiet and thoughtful. Still a little bit funny, but
as you'd expect, someone living millions
alone
of
in space.
Loneliness in terms of being alone, but loneliness also in terms of how we are sometimes, just when we are in the world. All of that is what this is about. It's a little too slow and a little too philosophical and introspective for me.
Spider sort of psychoanalyzes him. That's weird. He has conversations with the spider. Gets a little.
It's as if Hal.
We're
less mean and didn't want to kill you. But that's what's going on in this movie. It kind of reminded me of Moon a little bit. Sam Rockwell, Zowie Bowie's movie. This sort of thing. But it didn't quite work for me.
Yeah, it didn't quite get there.
Spaceman is streaming on Netflix. It's rated R, starring Adam Sandler, Carey Mulligan, and Paul Dano. Cabrini is a biographical drama focused on the life of Italian immigrant Francesca Cabrini, who arrived in New York City and advocated for children and for the poor in the city. The film stars Christiana Dellana, John Lithgow in the cast as well. Alejandro Monteverde is the director. Tim, what did you think of Cabrini? Please get us started before we break.
I actually rather enjoyed this biopic from Angel Studios, which is a faith-based studio. The director of this directed The Sound of Freedom and a few other things, but this is a pretty faithful biography of Cabrini. Who created the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, a religious organization, came to the United States, sent here by the Pope in 1889 with six of her sisters, and they built this organization in an extremely racist New York that treated Italian people about as badly as they treated Irish people and black people. So she had to build all that. I had a cousin who lived in the Cabrini Green housing projects in Chicago.
Very famous housing project.
When I was a kid, in the middle of the 70s, you know, I never thought about it. That's her. If you roam around the United States, you will find things with the word Cabrini on them. That's her. She was beatified and became one of the first saint woman beatified in the United States.
Cabrini is the film, again, starring Christiana Dellana. Alejandro Monteverde, the director, Rod Barr, wrote the screenplay. It's rated PG-13 and it goes into wide release next Friday, March 8th. We'll hear what Lael has to say about it, but I do want to remind you that Lael and Tim and our other nine critics will all be up on stage this Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Orpheum Theater, downtown LA, for our 22nd annual film. Film Week Academy Awards preview. You'll hear them go at it over all the top categories of the Oscars. If you've never been there, make sure, because this is a great year in movies, that you don't miss it. I'm looking forward to this one as much as any of the ones we've done because of the range of terrific films and performances. Tickets at LAist.com/events. Back in a minute.
Support for LAist comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This fascinating exhibition features all four of the Spanish artist's major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. With over 200 prints on view, this exhibition offers insight into the artist's creative process and the full range of his expressive capacity. Now on view. More information at NortonSimon.org.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle with critics Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com. Leah Lowenstein, our critic, joining us as well. We're going to hear from Leah about the biopic Cabrini on the life of Francesca Cabrini, Italian immigrant to New York City who had a huge impact on the lives of those living in poverty in that city and around the country. The film is directed by Alejandro Monteverde, rated PG-13. Leo, what did you think of Cabrini?
So I agree with Tim. I liked the film. I thought it was really impressively done, beautifully mounted, sort of gorgeous to look at. And her story is incredibly, incredibly impactful. I mean, the fact that she created not only this orphanage in New York as an immigrant herself, but then a hospital and then a network of orphanages, not just in the U.S., but all over the world. I mean, it's really amazing that a woman could do that, you know, beginning in the late 19th century. And everything that she came up against, including resistance from the Archbishop, you know, even from the Vatican, you know, the way it handles it, and this is really my only objection with the film, is that some of it felt very staged and very Hollywood. Like she has this, she's like one of the senior archbishops in the Vatican says, no, we will not allow you to go from Italy to she wants originally to go to China to build an orphanage. And he's like, no, you've written us 11 times to ask us. Well, it's no, and it's no is final. And then she says, well, then I must speak to His Holiness. I must speak to the Pope. So then she speaks to the Pope, played by Giancarlo Giannini, by the way, wonderful Italian actor.
Yeah.
And somehow, you know, she manages to convince him with her charm that he must let her go. And over, this scene sort of plays out over and over and over again. She meets a very powerful man who says, what, a woman? You know, come on, you can't. And by the way, Italians are whatever, this and that. And, you know, but then she impresses them or pushes her way through. Or at one point she gets a newspaper writer from The New York Times to write a story about it that actually changes things, shifts things in her direction. And, you know, I just thought, it's a really, really impressive story. Her life, which I then Googled and, you know, wanted to read every detail about, was really interesting. And actually, she does bear a bit of a resemblance to the actress, Christiana Dellana, who plays her.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was just a little too staged, a little too cinematically over.
And that's one of the problems I have in a lot of biopics,
right?
Because one scene has to stand in for
so much.
And so you feel like it didn't really happen this way,
because right.
That's, you know, it's
like
a composite scene.
It's reduced.
Scene.
It's like,
yeah.
It's everything is just pushed, yeah, into that one scene. And so as a consequence, it feels a little bit disingenuous, which is too bad, because as a whole, I thought the movie was, you know, worth seeing.
Yeah.
We're talking about Cabrini, rated PG-13. It's in wide release starting next Friday, March 8th. The romantic thriller Love Lies Bleeding stars Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, and Jenna Malone. Rose Glass directed and co-wrote the screenplay with Veronica Tofilska. Tim, what did you think of Love Lies Bleeding?
Oh, I love this vicious little movie. This is just a mean, nasty, nasty, vicious little movie. That's
as
so
the title
funny.
Would indicate.
So funny, but vicious is nasty. I'm nuts about Christian Stewart. He's great. Rose Glass, of course, did St. Maud, too. This little movie, which takes place in Mexico, you have Christian Stewart, who works at this workout facility, right? And she has this father, who's this guy played by Ed Harris. You just got to look him up. The thing he's doing with his hair, it tells you everything you need to know about his character. Just look at his hair, and you know who he is right away. And then this woman, this rising bodybuilder, comes to town, played by Katie O'Brien. Katie, we've been watching her for a long time. She's in The Mandalorian. She was in Black Lightning. She's in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's been this, and she's just this good, solid actress. She makes her bones in this movie as this bodybuilder. And there's this crime thing that's going on behind all of this as they start this affair. And we get this movie that reminds me of the early Coen Brothers movies. I mean early Coen Brothers, Blood Simple.
Yeah,
early.
Blood Simple, yeah.
Those little mean movies. Even Fargo.
With the knife in the hand.
When they put the guy through the chipper. This movie gets that mean. While still just being so funny. Just funny, 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 funny all the way through. It's a sharp, pointed little movie. And I think it makes a movie star out of our Katie O'Brien.
Love Lies Bleeding, the romantic thriller starring Kristen Stewart and Katie O'Brien, directed by Rose Glass. You can see it at the Los Feliz Theater starting this Sunday, March 3rd, and then it expands to select theaters on March 15th. It's rated R. The music documentary The Reverend tells the story of Reverend Vince Anderson. The film is directed by Nick Canfield. Leo, what'd you think of The Reverend?
So I'm very mixed on this documentary. It sort of starts out kind of but then it gets significantly better halfway through. A little background, Vince Anderson in the 90s was going to seminary school. I guess in the 80s he went to seminary school. He felt a calling to be a reverend, to be a minister. He dropped out and realized that what he really wanted to do was be a musician. But he created this band called the Love Choir, and with this really sort of raspy voice and sort of like gnarly, approach to music, he has this sort of underground band, and they play in clubs, they play in churches, and he's preaching through his music. Let's say it's gospel, but he himself doesn't claim to be always a reverend. He also never completed his seminary training.
He didn't even get through. He didn't get through right. The first month.
No, he did. Whatever. but he's known as the reverend. And I thought the first sort of two-thirds of half the film was sort of it's sort of interesting. But Questlove is there. He talks about meeting him, even playing backup drums in the band at one point. A lot of the musicians who are in the band say, we're not even religious. We don't even believe in God. We don't whatever. But he communicates. He connects with people through his music and through his sort of preaching through his music. But at about halfway through the film, he addresses the fact that he is a Christian and that Christianity has been abused in support of Trump, in support of the right wing movement, and that he says there's another way. Like, you can still be connected to God and to your community, but it doesn't mean you need to be connected to Trump. Like, let's think about this. Let's think about the common good. Let's think about, what religion, what the teachings of Christ were about, which is, be kind, do unto others, and all of that. And that's not there's a riff that he goes on where he's like, Jesus said, be kind to those who don't have. I don't think Trump would really support that. Anyway, it gets significantly better in the middle, and I thought it was interesting the idea of being a religious influencer and how that power can be used for different things. And I thought it was, he's a really interesting character.
And are his songs explicitly religious, or just the rap that he does, like leading into the song?
There's a lot of gospel music.
There's some gospel. He talks about God.
Oh yeah, he's a holy roller. He rolls hard too, boy.
He does, but he also says, somebody said that I don't believe in God, I'm not going to listen to you. And he says, well, I don't believe in God Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
but it is an interesting film that he makes these very specific. He's like Dr. John meets Howlin' Wolf with a little bit of who's that reverend that used to with the curly hair? Reverend Ike.
Reverend Ike.
With a little
spice,
little tap of Reverend Ike in there. That's who he is.
Yeah, Reverend Ike, a powerhouse. The Reverend is unrated. It's streaming on the Criterion Channel. Amelia's Children, a Portuguese horror thriller that stars Bridget Lundy Payne and Carlota Cota. The film's written and directed by Gabriel Abrantes. Tim, what did you think of Amelia's Children?
Well, it's a sharp little horror movie, this is. Cronenbergian, if I can coin a term. I think I might be coining the term right there, if you will. This film opens with a young woman who seems to be having at least one of her two twins stolen from her. Very quick sequence. Fast forward to present day. We find this young man and his girlfriend, who is a doctor, and he does one of those DNA tests and finds out that he has a twin brother. And they go to visit this twin brother in Portugal. The twin brother is also played by this actor, who is a very good actor. He affects these two characters. One of them has a Portuguese accent, and the guy that he's playing from New York doesn't have a Portuguese, so he's really killing this. And we slip into this story that's going to explain what happened to that first baby and what's going on here. The actress that plays his mother, we're going to meet his mother, her face is disfigured in this horrible way. The makeup is fascinating, extraordinary. She plays, so we see her in present day as well as back then. She's ridiculously beautiful. But when she's wrapped in this grotesque, and it's just really, really good. And like I said, it goes to those Cronenbergian places that make you real uncomfortable.
As I was going to say, it sounds kind of spine-tingling unsettling.
Yeah, that's exactly where we are.
We're talking about Amelia's Children from Portugal, the horror thriller written and directed by Gabriel Abrantes. It's unrated in English and Portuguese and subtitled. You can see it at Lemley's Glendale Theater, and it's available on demand. Megamind versus the Doom Syndicate is an animated film, and the movie's directed by Eric Fogel, written by Alan Schoolcraft and Brent Simons. Megamind versus the Doom Syndicate, Lael?
Yes. Well, the last Megamind, the original Megamind, came out in 2010. It made $310 million worldwide, so it was quite a hit, over $100 million in the U.S. It had a dream cast with Will Ferrell in the title role, Tina Fey, Jonah Hill, Brad Pitt, a fantastic
soundtrack. And it brought us the Minions, didn't it?
Well, hang on to that for a second, because there's an issue with that. It brought us the concept of Minions, but not the actual...
Oh, the characters.
That's a different franchise.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually addressed in this one, that they're no longer able to call a character Minion for copyright reasons. That's probably the funniest thing about
that's
this.
That's very funny.
I did watch the original Megamind a couple nights ago just to make sure that I was fresh on it. It was pretty entertaining of what it is to be a villain and a hero and the need for an antagonist. And that one, Megamind, Will Ferrell, who dispatches with another villain pretty quickly, he realizes that he needs to create a villain. So he turns himself into a hero and then creates a villain to oppose him. This has none of those voice actors. It supposedly happens only a couple days after the original, despite the fact that it's 14 years later in real life. And so when Megamind had a flip phone 2 days ago in the 2010 version, and this one, suddenly everyone has smartphones, including a 10-year-old girl who wants to be an influencer.
What a difference did they make.
Right? Right, exactly. There's no continuity. There's the characters also visually are rendered cheaply. I'm sure Charles would have a lot to say about that. Overall, it feels like a cash grab with lame jokes that pander to kids. And it doesn't even feel like the same characters. By the way, if you were thinking, well, this sounds like they're trying to set it up for a TV series, you're right. They are. There's a TV series on Peacock, a new Megamind that they're setting up. But if you like the first one, do yourself a favor and stay away from this Megamind.
So this is setting up, I guess, for the series Megamind Rules that will be coming later. So the sequel to Megamind, Megamind and the Doom Syndicate, directed by Eric Fogel, and it's streaming on Peacock. Silver Haze is a drama that stars Vicky Knight, Esme Creed Miles, and it's written and directed by Sasha Pollock. What do you think of Silver Haze, Tim?
This is actually quite powerful, quite moving. Vicky Knight, keep her in mind. In this movie, we have a young woman named Frankie who was burned over 40% of her body when she was 8 years old in this fire. She, right in the film, she's a nurse working, and she really has this need for either revenge or at least accountability with the individual or individuals that caused this thing that happened 15 years ago. And we watch this movie that's happening here, and she falls in love with one of her patients. She's a beloved figure at this hospital where she works. Now, this young woman, Vicky Knight. Vicky Knight is a young woman who, when she was 8 years old, was burned over 80% of her body. And she's in this film playing this character. She's been in several films, including another one of Sarah's films. But this is a factual sort of thing. Mm-hmm. This film comes out of a workshop that she did with this director that incorporates these things that actually happened to her in her life into this narrative fiction story. So we have her playing not exactly her, but a character who experienced this exact same thing that she experienced, and they sort of worked their way out into this fictional story. She is a magnificent actress. She is not afraid of anything, literally anything. This is a very good movie too. It's not just her. The film is good. They managed to take this reality and to craft it into a film that's very identifiable. I recommend this highly. You really want to see this and don't shy away from it. Don't shy away from it.
Stars Vicky Knight and Esme Creed Miles, Charlotte Knight in the cast as well. Sasha Polak was the writer-director of the film Silver Haze. It's unrated, and you can see it at the Lumiere Cinema in Beverly Hills. And starting March 12th, it'll be available on demand. Just want to remind you that Lael and Tim will be with all of our other Film Week critics, everyone on stage this Sunday, 1 o'clock in the afternoon at the beautiful historic Orpheum Theater on Broadway in downtown Los Angeles, the 22nd year that we've done this. We began with a series at Hollywood's Egyptian Theater, moved to larger venues on Broadway. Now we're at the Orpheum for the second straight year, and we sure hope you're there in the audience. It's a beautiful place to see clips of your favorite films of the year. That's what we're going to do, and our critics are going to weigh in on all the different categories. And you'll hear plenty of back and forth because so many of these categories are really hotly contested, great performances, terrific screenplays, and dynamite films for us to debate. It may be hard to find a consensus, but it'll sure be fun to listen to all of it. Join us this Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Orpheum Theater. Get your tickets now at las.com/events. That's las.com/events. I sure look forward to seeing you Sunday. More to come on Film Week. We'll look at the best international films.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.